Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
It is Football Archaeology Tuesday, and we have Timothy Brown, the great author and historian of football archaeology, coming on to join us to talk about the great officiating signal of first down and its history and where it came from. It's all coming up with Tim in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And it's Tuesday. And once again, we're going to do a little bit of an archaeological dig, football archaeology with Timothy Brown and his footballarchaeology.com. Timothy Brown, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Hey, how you doing, Darren?
I am doing fantastic. Yeah, nice to see you too, and nice to be seen. So, you know, we're rolling right along and we're chugging down the road here, getting closer and closer to football season. We're going to start seeing some preseason games already when we're recording this, and, teams are in camp and it's getting exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I just posted a tidbit the other day at football training camp, and it going back to the days when people actually did camp. You know, they camped in tents and, you know, a lot of the teams tried to get out away from everything else. And so training camp really originally meant that you went and camped.
that's a brilliant idea. You get away from all the distractions of home and family and girlfriends and anything else. And I think it's really brilliant of coaches. Whoever started that practice did a really nice job, and it's carried on to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And nicer weather for some, it got them out of the heat of the southern states.
Right. That's true. Well, today we're going to talk about one of your tidbits from back in the middle of July, an officiating tidbit, which really, you know, perked my ears up and my eyes when I was reading it. And it's a signaling of a first down and some of the history on that if you could discuss with us.
Yeah. So one of the things I think people, you know, either don't think about or forget is that just as play on the field has evolved over the years, so have other aspects of football. You know, uniforms and equipment evolved, but, you know, one of the things that has evolved substantially is how officials work and the presence that they have on the field. So this particular tidbit made the point that I basically quoted a guy named F.A. Lambert, who officiated Big Ten and other kinds of games. And he published the first or one of the first books on kind of the methods and techniques of officiating. And part of that he did that in like 1926. So in part of that, he discusses how you signal a first down. And he was saying that, you know, you raise your hand in the air with your index finger raised, and you kind of circle, you kind of wave you move your arm around in a bit of a circle. And so, you know, now we all know you signal first down, or the referee signals a first down by extending the arm out and, you know, downfield. But that was just one of those pieces that had to, there wasn't a set way to do it. You know, somebody had to dream that up at one point. And so, you know, here it was in the mid 1920s, and this guy was still promoting, you know, you raise your index finger into the air. And that was how he, you know, preferred signaling a first down. There just wasn't a standard process for doing that.
Yeah. That's interesting that so he's the first one to really record of signaling a first down. Because that's so important, those signals to the press box, even in this age, even with our radio technology and everything else going on. And how many times when you're watching a game and you're not sure what's happening, but you see some of the signals of the interactions of the officials, you know, they're doing the signals between themselves, you know, saying it's a first down or he was holding or whatever, offsides. And you sort of have an idea before the referee even announces it to the press box verbally. And it's kind of nice. And, you know, that's a great tradition of signals.
Yeah. So, and I just want to make sure I didn't misstate anything. So Lambert was not the first to figure out how to signal a first down. Others did it. They just, you know, in some cases it's described in, say, newspaper articles that somebody signaled the first down, but they don't tell you exactly what they did. And so Lambert, in his book, does also mention a guy named Frank Birch. And Birch is, you know, best as I can tell, and I think now is pretty well credited as being the person who created referee signals. So he's the one who he started doing it, you know, appears to be like the early teens, so 1912, 13, et cetera. And by 17, he also did a number of Big Ten games, and now what would be the, you know, the Missouri Valley Conference and some of those kinds of schools. He lived in Illinois and Iowa, and so in any event, he was the first to really document these signals, and he would print them up and hand them out to the guys in the press box, and so before the game. So that way they could see what he was doing and what, you know, what those meant. Now, in his case, most of his were penalty signals, right? So, you know, holding, you know, he had, you know, you grabbed one wrist. So one hand grabbed a wrist. He had incomplete pass. He had that signal, you know, the crossing, the waving of the arms across one another. But, you know, so in a number of the signals that he came up with, are still in use today. Others that he figured, that he developed, have been changed. So one of the things one of his signals for roughing and for clipping, which were kind of the same penalty at the time, it was a military salute. And eventually the American Legion complained to him that this, you know, this roughing and it's kind of this illegal, unnecessary roughness type of penalty shouldn't be a military salute. So then they changed it. Right. So it's just an interesting thing, and that, you know, here's this guy who created these signals. It's documented in a book from 1918, you know, a number of the signals that he you know, developed. And then it really wasn't until like 1929, the National High School Football Association, the National Football Officials Association recommended the use of a standard set of signals. And so, you know, they published those, and it was in a bunch of newspapers. And, but even there, you know, one of the things that they had, similar to this first down, for a safety, the referee was to raise his hand in the air and extend two fingers, just like we would normally. If you were counting, you know, counting to two on your hands, your index and your middle finger, you know, would be extended above. And that's how you signal a safety according to their method, you know, originally. So, you know, things change, but, you know, now for the most part, we all understand what those signals mean. And so the fans know what's going on and the people in the press box know what's going on. But back in the day, a lot of folks had no clue why yardage was being marched off.
Wow, that is extremely interesting. So all sort of goes back to those two gentlemen and the recording in the officials associations adopting some of those signals and standardizing it. So that is some pretty interesting stuff, and something we sort of take for granted today when the stripes are out there doing their job. So
hey, well, Tim, and you mentioned the stripes too, and I just, you know, it's something I hadn't picked up on. I was reviewing, you know, an article today that when I was doing some research on Frank Birch again, and one of the articles mentioned that it said that he was the guy. So before the black and white striped shirts, a lot of officials were all white. And it credited, this article credited him with being the guy who first started wearing all white. So I don't, you know, I haven't been able to verify that or find that from a different source, but perhaps he was the guy.
Yeah, so it could be. You bring up an interesting story we had back in probably late 90s, early 2000s, when officials were changing from going from white knickers to black slacks like they have today, athletic slacks. And I was a proponent. I wanted the black slacks because, you know, we still had a lot of grass fields that we played on, at least around this area. You get grass stains on knickers, it's darn near impossible to get it out, or mud or whatever. But we had a younger official than I. He felt it was traditional to wear the white knickers. So I came to the next meeting. He was our rules interpreter for our chapter. So I brought a picture in of Walter Camp officiating a game in a black suit or a dark colored suit. It was hard to tell with the, and I said, see, they're wearing black pants back there in the 1880s or whenever the picture was. So I made my point to him. I said, it's more traditional black pants.
Yeah, you got it.
So, Tim, why don't you share with us where everybody can get your tidbits daily, and your site as well, please.
Sure. So the site is footballarchaeology.com. And, you know, if you just Google that, you should be able to find it, or just, you know, type the URL in. And I also post on, so if you go to the site, you can, there's an option to subscribe. You can subscribe for free. There's a paid option where you get some additional information as part of that subscription. But I also, I post everything that I do. I also put it out on Twitter. So you can follow me on Twitter, and there my handle is at FOFS, but I, you know, the name that you'd find, if you search for me, you'll find it as Football Archaeology as well.
Okay. Well, Tim, we appreciate you coming on here, sharing with us a little bit of a football history again, educating us, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Hey, very good. Look forward to it. Thanks, Darren.
That's all the football history we have today, folks. Join us back tomorrow for more of your football history. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.